You never know where it's heading. The Scenic Drive with Rion. On Jacaranda FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man himself, a book now out, A Taste for Life, How the Spur Legend Was Born, Alan Amble, with us on the show. What a pleasure. Alan, you're back.
Hi, Rion.
Sorry, we're discussing our next step to move into politics in 2024, so sorry.
I heard a bit of it, yeah. Yes, you're running a nice circus there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. Now we're going to bribe our way in, Alan, and hopefully you'll be a contributor to the campaign in 2024. Definitely come to your house and on the mountain.
No, you must come visit me when you're in Cape Town, for sure.
That's a done deal, Alan.
Okay, I'd love to meet you.
Same. Now, we were earlier on, I used to work for Greeks for many, many years in my life. Many years.
Yeah.
And they taught me, and I got to give it to them, the Theophanos family and the Lavanos family, they taught me a lot about business. And I want to go all the way back to Uncle George, who started the Golden Spurs Steakhouse back in the day in Rosebank. And you started working for him. And the old man taught you a few things. Like, what lessons did you eventually apply to your business plan later on?
Well, you know what happened was I was at university because I was dodging the army and I could get out of 9 months by going to Wits University and doing a 6-week basic and then 3-by-3-week camps in the veld for the next 3 years thereafter. I started working in the steakhouse and my dad said I wasn't working hard enough. So I said, Dad, I'll pay you back. I've got this job and I'll pay for myself in future. And I met his son and his nephew, Arthur Belaskis, who incidentally, Arthur Belaskis' father, Xenophon, took a hat-trick at Lord's in the 1930s. He was famous for that. A Greek man who took a hat-trick at Lord's. Yeah. Now, these guys became my good friends. I became their good friend. And we used to jawl a lot on Sunday night, go to the Greek taverna. And through them, I met Uncle George. But Uncle George was a solitary sort of a guy. He was a very nice man. A very nice man. He used to come in at 5 in the morning, open the shop up. He'd make the coffee for himself. And then when the staff arrived, they'd start cleaning. And his wife and her sister, who actually ran the downstairs, as it was in those days, food preparation section, came in at 11 o'clock. Arthur and Georgie came in. And the other staff for the night shift came in at 12:30. And Uncle George had an office in town, small office where he used to spend a good 2/3 of the rest of the day before going home, go to bed early, get up early the next morning and repeat the cycle. And sometimes I'd go in there and he'd talk to me about his experiences in America. And he's the man who brought Milky Lane to South Africa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
And he started a steakhouse or two in Johannesburg. But unfortunately, you know, they understood retail, the Halamandris and Belaskis family. They understood retail. But they didn't understand franchising. And I said I wanted to go to Cape Town and open there. And they agreed. Uncle George, at the end, tried to get me to change my mind because he was fond of me and he was scared that I wouldn't make it if I didn't have the support that they promised me. But I think he knew they couldn't deliver, because 9 people were supposed to come when I opened the business and not one pitched up. They were all overwhelmed in Joburg with work and they couldn't spare anybody. And so we had a bit of a disengagement for a while, and then I made an arrangement with Uncle George that he'd join my franchise company with a share, which he did for some years, before he phoned me and said, Alan, it's time for you to buy me out, which I did. But Uncle George was a wonderful guy, and I respect him today. And as I say in my book, when I get to heaven, I'll hug him. Because he taught me a lot through quiet wisdom. But what I really learned was on the floor of the steakhouse as a waiter. That's where I learned the systems and what to do.
So that's the thing. And I know you also had this motto that, it's there's no such a thing like it's not my job. It's everyone's
That's
job.
That's one of the mottos. Yeah.
And I love that. And I just want to get to one thing, and I consistently find this as a problem in many restaurants I go to. I go to a lot of restaurants. But it's like, yes, they don't understand this whole concept that without, like, doesn't matter what you own, the most precious possession is the customer. Very few
Absolutely.
People understand that. They don't get it.
1,000,000%.
They don't get it. And I hate it.
And another motto, another mantra of mine was and is, it doesn't matter who suffers as long as it's not the business. And of course, as you quite rightly said, Rion, the business is the customer. And if you look after the customer and help him every which way you can by putting yourself inside his head, what does he want? He wants a warm welcome. He wants the table that he wants. He wants to be looked after. He wants you to be there with the new fork when he drops his fork on the floor before he can even pick his up, all that sort of stuff.
The worst thing, Alan, is that you, it, I think it's the biggest sin in any restaurant when any customer has to look around for a waiter. Has to
and
try
wave.
To, we are ready to order. It's the worst thing you can do
You're
to your
You're quite
business.
Right. And that means the boss isn't doing his job because he's like an air traffic controller. He should be saying to the waiter, time to go to table 4 or whatever. You know, take off here. Sweep there. Pick this up. And the air traffic controllers in restaurants don't really exist today. You know, they... Although, to be fair, COVID has definitely given people a wake-up call. They've got to work harder now because they lost a lot of customers.
So now, a few tricks of the trade, because marketing is a big one. And I know right at the beginning, you know, the whole the ice cream story, saying to the schools how the kids get a free ice cream on Tuesdays. And they hung around and they told their parents. So marketing, what are the top three lessons, Salah? Like, if you want to go from one little store in Cape Town to 600, the three top lessons here. Help us
now.
Now,
look, you've got to be consistent all the time, and you've got to deliver. You know, there's no point going and buying a beautiful, brand-new, sparkling car and paying for it, and you come for delivery, and they give you a smaller model. So you must never shortchange your customer. You must always look after him and love him and her. That's number one. Number two, the place must be spotless, splinter-knit. Every day, everything must shine, everything must be clean. Customers don't want to go into a place that's not wholesome, is a good word. And number three, if you want to build, you've just got to work hard enough and be exciting enough in what you offer and how you offer it that people want to come back and they want to buy the brand themselves because they understand that you're making money and they want to make money with you. You know, marketing is very important, how you present yourself. Decor is very important. I was very involved in the decor and the creative side of the business. You've got to make an environment that is welcoming, that puts the customer first. Again, everything's about the customer.
Listen, because you're mentioning it in the book, this is the one thing, and you know, I'm looking at our social media pages, there's always one that still remembers the story. It's the chapter 13 story. It's the showdown at Texamo Spur, and this happened 2017. You remember the story. One afternoon, it was Human Rights Month, and there was this showdown between this white guy, this black woman, and suddenly, you know, people said, boycott the Spur. Did this really have that detrimental an impact, this so-called boycott?
You know what, Rion? For a while it actually did. And it hurt me badly because we'd looked after our people, our customers, so well. And unfortunately, when that sort of tribal instinct kicks in, some people tend to lose their sense of balance and they get radical. And I mean, what really hurt me was when a guy in Somerset West at our store was standing at his door and this elderly couple walked past who were old customers. Said, Mora kom binne, and they said, no, our son has told us we're not allowed to go here anymore. Now, that cut me to the quick. It really did. It hurt me. I didn't know them, but that was symptomatic of a deeper sort of issue that had to do with things that Spur had nothing to do with at all. And unfortunately, somebody in our company, instead of being humble and phoning and asking for advice, made a snap decision, and that cost us. It cost us dearly. But over time, by being warm, by being friendly, by being forgiving, we won our customers back. And there might be some still today who say, no, well, that's it, they're not there anymore. And I'm very sorry, and I apologize again if they're listening. That wasn't our intention. The one guy who made that mistake made it with the sort of he felt he was doing the right thing, but he should have given it a bit more thought before he opened his mouth.
I got to say, there are a lot more happy memories than bad memories about Spur.
And you're
the man responsible for most of them. It's such a South African institution. You've done so well with your life, Alan, and you've given us this wonderful place. And I think back of how many memories I've had, how many hungover Sunday mornings I went to the Spur and had greasy bread. That's the thing. And then how many happy kids, little parties. So I just want to say thank you for giving us this institution, Alan. I don't get the opportunity to speak to you often. I haven't had that opportunity before. But thank you for Spur, sir. It's been a good experience for all of us all these years.
That's very kind of you, Rian. Ek waardeer het vragtig. That's hell of a nice of you, and I appreciate it, and I'm delighted to be of service. It's been a good ride for me, too.
So if you have any influence left, Alan, is there any way we can get the Salad Valley back?
Not a hope in hell, sir. I've been out of the business for 2.5 years now.
I miss it.
And my influence is probably, to be honest, in the minus category, because the new people who've taken over, they want to do things their way. They want to prove that they know enough to really make things work, and I wish them luck, because I want that brand to soar, and I want it to get better and better. Let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, listen, you've followed the river in your life, and you've done well, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm definitely looking you up when I'm in Cape Town, Alan.
Please do. You've got my number. Phone me.
Will do. Pleasure. Thanks
okay,
so much,
thank
Alan.
You, sir.
Go well.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Taste for Life, his book, Alan Ambor. There's so much more.
Yeah.
Go get the book. Incredible guy, eh?
The Scenic Drive with Rian. Exclusive to Jacaranda FM. Weekdays, 4 to 7 p.m.